This week on the show, Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe breaks down the Bruins draft. Tyler Sullivan of 24/7 Sports and DraftKings catches us up on the Patriots offseason. The Red Sox honored a legend this weekend. And some of your favorite childhood basketball players return to the hardwood. All that and more, Calling It, starts right now. Welcome into Calling It. Another episode post-draft, post-NHL draft, on the phone to talk about how the Bruins did this past weekend. Kevin Paul DuPont from the Boston Globe. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, guys.
So my first question, Juho Vaakanainen, did I get that right?
It sounds right.
I think
who am I to say?
It's going to be an adventure to figure that one out. He was the Bruins' first pick in the draft, a defenseman. They went pretty defenseman heavy. Your thoughts overall, but specifically on the top pick?
Well, I wish, as I say every year, every draft that I've ever been to, other than if you've got somebody like Lindros or Joe Sakic, you know, Sakic to a degree, not number one pick, but guys with really high profile. You know, I'm just throwing darts, and I wouldn't pretend to tell people that I know. What I do know from talking to Scott Bradley, the assistant general manager who was overseeing the draft this year after some moves in the front office, that as always, they're excited about him. I would say what stands out in Bradley's appraisal was, by his account, there are parts of his skating game that remind him of Paul Coffey. Now, which is a dangerous turf, because I know how that's going to resonate with fans, which is they're going to expect the kid to show up and look like Paul Coffey. I'm sure if people who remember Paul Coffey's game, you know, as well as being very fast, and efficient, it was very smooth. It was probably among the top three, four smoothest skaters I've ever seen. So that's promising. You know, smooth skating and skating ability alone are hardly the entire package. I've seen very fast skaters not make it in the league. Kid that comes to mind in Buffalo who had some success, Maxim Afinogenov. I thought, based on what I saw naked eye, he'd be a superstar. He wasn't. On the same hand of the 92 Olympics in France, I remember seeing Alexei Kovalev for the first time. And I saw his skating. I said, he'll be a superstar. And he was. So you don't know. It's what sort of concerned me most on the Bruins top pick is, if you go by Red Line Report, which is by no means the gospel, but they've got a good track record of at least being invested in these kids in terms of knowing their games. They had him considerably down the list. The Bruins picked at 18th. They ranked him around 50th. So that causes me some concern. But again, so much of it, as you guys know, so much of it is these kids come in at 18 with a certain skill package. And then it really does come down to heart, desire, and want.
How does that happen, that a player's ranked that low on the big board and they still end up taking him in the first round?
Well, I think it happens in that they've done their scouting and they've got their European scouts. And sometimes it can be just a particular scout or two falls in love with a guy. And again, they do a deeper dive on individual. An individual scout will do a deeper dive on an individual kid than, say, a touting service like Redline Report, who's got to try to account for all the best skating talent around the world, North America and Europe. So in some cases, it's getting invested with the kid, knowing kid's background, having that amount of time, and that's really what I think drove this more than anything. At the time, I don't have my papers in front of me. At the time they were making the 18th pick, the Bruins, there were still two or three kids in the top 10 or 12 rankings by a Red Line Report that hadn't been grabbed. Well, you know, there were other teams that passed on them too. So it isn't a science. It isn't an art. It's something in between of the both of those. And sometimes they hit. Sometimes they hit real well. Look at the 15 draft where they took the three kids in succession in the first round. And it ends up being Brandon Carlo in the second round who beats them all to the league. So it's unlike the NFL and the NBA in particular, where you at least you can make smart assessments on kids who are 21, 22 years old. That's a little bit more of a science in my mind than when you're dealing with 18-year-old kids.
The Bruins went pretty defenseman heavy in this draft, picking a few defensemen, and they already have a lot of young defensemen on this roster. Could you see them moving any of these young defensemen either from this draft or from the previous drafts?
Yeah, sure they could. And in particular, I think they could do it to get a ready-made defenseman. They still want somebody for the left side who can play, you know, pick some minutes here, 16, 18, 20, 22 minutes a game. And if they have questions about whether they can get that out of any of their kids, say Grizzlick, for example, they've got the Zaboral kid who played in junior this year. They don't feel that those kids are ready to, and I do think they don't believe that yet. Then they're going to have to go get some help. And if you're going to get it at a specific position, you're going to have to pay for it somehow. And oftentimes it'll mean giving up some of those, kids you consider prime prospects, and not necessarily a defenseman, but I would say, just given what the ethos around the league is these days about defense and how hard it was, and we saw this in the playoffs with the Bruins, they lost two or three of their top six in the first round, and basically that round collapsed on them because they didn't have the defensive help.
Another pick, moving a little further down the draft board here, Jeremy Swayman in the fourth round, a goaltender from Alaska. He'll be headed to UMaine, so we won't see him in Boston or even Providence for a little bit, but what have you been hearing about him?
Bob Asenza was their goaltending coach here. He really, really liked him, and that, going back to what drove the first pick, that really drove this pick, is that Asenza being so high, and I think that's good. I find that he's got a sharp eye. He's a good guy, makes smart decisions. I've watched him work with, you know, just this past year with Rask and Hudobin, but also for years past. So, that's what drove that one. They did have somebody, they didn't say who it was. They had somebody else identified. And another goalie above this kid, and that kid went before. So at the time, it was the guy they had the most confidence in. And we'll see. He's got decent size. He has moved around. I was looking at his chart the other day. He's been in a few different organizations here. So he's been on this career. Needless to say, he's serious about the career path. That said, so is or so was and remains Malcolm Subban, and it hasn't worked out for Malcolm. And going back to our earlier discussion about skaters with just speed, Subban's another example of tremendous athlete and very, very fast. I mean, I have to say, of the kids I've watched, the fastest I've seen in terms of post-to-post, agility in net, but it hasn't added up yet. So, again, another good example. And here we are, what, 5 years down the road now since Malcolm Subban was drafted? And it hasn't come together for him. Still young. He's 23. A lot of college seniors who graduate at 23 who choose the NCAA path. It could come together. But again, I think it speaks to skill alone, and that's really what you're drafting on, because you don't know about the maturity curve. You don't know about their dedication to the sport, all of those things. Very tricky.
So how does this affect Malcolm Subban's future with the Bruins, if at all?
Well, he is a restricted free agent. We'll find out this week if they're tendering him an offer. It could very well be, and I'm not suggesting this is the case, but it could be that they decide not to tender him an offer, and he becomes an unrestricted free agent. I doubt that will happen. I think they'll qualify him, which whatever his number is, I don't know, which would, if nothing else, retain their rights. I would think at this point, after 5 years, and Zane McIntyre's solid year, at some point, that point could be now, is to fish or cut bait on this kid. And, you know, my guess is they qualify him and then they make a deal around him.
So elsewhere in free agency, that's the next step in the NHL offseason. The Bruins, they need some wing depth. We talked about the defensive depth they're lacking. How does the group of free agents this offseason kind of set up for the Bruins? Are there going to be guys to fit the holes they need?
Well, I have to say, based on their track record under Sweeney and beyond Sweeney, if I were them, I certainly wouldn't be looking at the high end. So the high end specific to their need, a forward and a defenseman, would be Radulov from Montreal and Shattenkirk, who finished the year in Washington. Shattenkirk, of course, Kevin went to BU. Radulov has been around for a while. If you remember his history, he was a Nashville pick, didn't want to come, did come, went back to Russia, I should say the Canadians hit it just right by bringing him in this year. And he's a good player. He's a good, you know, what I like to say, a good filthy player. Gets in there, gets dirty, has the skill package. He's heavy. They're enticing. And both those, Radulov and Shattenkirk, I think will end up costing somebody the better part of $6.5 million, $7.5 million a year. But going back to their recent track record, they haven't done well under Sweeney with their high-end spends on Beleski and Backes. But they did very well on some of their lower-end purchases, you know, bringing in a kid like Schaefer, bringing in Dominic Moore. Who's the other kid? Achari. Not all of these are free agents. Some are deals. But, you know, cheap money. They got a lot of performance out of them. So if I were spending their money, given what their eye is thus far, I think that's where I'd be looking. Who knows where those players are, the names on those players. I just don't see them, in part because of, you know, they're a high salaried team anyway. They don't have a lot of money to go play with. I just don't see them based on their track record and what it would cost to bring in those guys that they'd go after them.
So we talked about potentially trading young defensemen on this team. Is there any veterans on the Boston Bruins roster that you could see being moved this offseason?
Well, starting goal, no. Defense, I don't see it. I mean, the two popular names that always come up, I'm sure you guys have seen these, you know, fans saying, trade Rask, trade Chara, trade Krejci. Well, you know, I don't think it's going to happen to any of them. If I were to focus on those names and think one were expendable, and even that's a reach of a word, I could see them engaging in a conversation around Krejci. You know, in part because of his injury history here with a couple of hips. But that's a dangerous game to play. He didn't have a great year this past season. He was slow to recover from his off-season hip surgery, but those hips are difficult surgeries, difficult rebuilds. The enticement in dealing him would be his cap number, which I don't have in front of me, but I think it's around 6.5, could be a touch higher. That's a high cap number for a guy his age with his history, you know, in terms of injury. And so that would be the name. Other than that, I don't think anybody's really sexy here in terms of trade. Yes, Beleski, sure. Hayes, absolutely. But, you know, if you're talking about a name that would be bringing something back, that would be the one. But I would give that probably, pick a number, 15% chance.
Kevin Paul DuPont, thank you very much. You can follow him on Twitter at GlobeKPD. Enjoy the off season for you before free agency gets hectic.
Thanks, gentlemen. Enjoyed it.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
All right, Boston.
There goes Ramirez. That ball is hit well. Deep to right. Dive. Can't get to it. Off the wall. One run is in. Here comes Ramirez. And the throw goes right to the middle of the infield. And Boston has gone ahead on the first hit of the series by David Ortiz. And it came at a big time.
This jersey that we wear today, it doesn't say Red Sox. It says Boston.
And here's David Ortiz to see that number today with three hits. This could be four. Back it goes. It's over. The Red Sox win, and they're moving on.
This is our city.
Ortiz in a deep
We'll see you later tonight.
And nobody gonna dictate our freedom.
Bases loaded, two out. Hard hit into right. Back at the wall. Tie game. Big Poppy, the grand slam.
Stay strong. Thank you.
Welcome back to Calling It. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz. The Red Sox over the weekend honored one of their greatest legends, a franchise that's been around for over 100 years, and a guy who has left perhaps a bigger impact than anybody else, David Ortiz. I guess it's official now. He's not coming back.
Yeah, I think putting the number up right next to Wade Boggs and Jackie Robinson is probably a good indication. I don't think anyone's ever played with their number retired.
Well, look, Jordan came back and wore 45.
Oh, true. He did.
So,
he did.
I mean, it's not over yet, but David Ortiz started with the Twins, one of the few Red Sox players who has had his number retired who didn't start and finish his career with the team, along with his good friend Pedro Martinez. 2003 on, just heroics after heroics after heroics, a champion for the city as well, a champion for his home country of the Dominican Republic, as was reflected in both his retirement ceremony and over the weekend, his number retirement ceremony. And Alex, we were talking a little bit off the air. I mean, for our childhood at least, the Mount Rushmore of Boston sports, that's three out of four gone now as Ortiz steps away. He was the Red Sox for a 15-year span there.
Oh, yeah. He was the guy. He was the constant. You know, beyond Veritek retiring, Pedro, Manny leaving, he was the one guy who stayed through
it
all.
I like how you didn't say Manny retired, because he hasn't yet.
He's playing minor league Japanese baseball. He's not even in the NPD. He's in the minor league version of that. But yeah, he's the one constant. And besides Brady, the most successful athlete of our lifetime.
Well, so they had the roast of David Ortiz the David Ortiz roast over the weekend as part of ceremonies. I think it was Rob Gronkowski who said, you know, people think David Ortiz is so great, but he was a designated hitter. Or no, it was Bill Burr who said this.
Yeah.
Bill Burr. He was so great, but he was a designated hitter. He didn't even play half the game, and he only won 3 rings. Tom Brady's 40 and has won 5. Just think if you ate a salad, which I thought was a great line. But so this brings me to kind of the first point of discussion. The greatest designated hitter of all time.
Is that a thing?
No, it is a thing.
It is.
And you saw the first pitch he threw out. We know why he was a designated hitter.
Yes, yeah.
It wasn't necessarily by choice, at least to an extent, why he didn't play the field. But and there's the steroids question too, obviously. Mm-hmm. But does the greatest – being the it's like will the greatest long snapper in NFL history get – and designated hitter is more than a long snapper. It's not a fair comparison, but – you know, is it enough to get him into Cooperstown?
Oh, absolutely. Look at the numbers. I mean, how many awful defensive players are in Cooperstown right now simply because they put – like, was Babe Ruth a great left fielder?
Well, he was a great pitcher.
He was a good pitcher. So he did add on that front as well, but he couldn't play the field, and I'm sure there's other people. I can't think of them off the top of my head. You can't take that into consideration, I don't think. He hit 541 home runs. He's over 2,500 hits. The guy is one of the greatest Red Sox of all time, and that's not the Tampa Bay Rays.
There's the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Giants, and everybody else.
Exactly. So he's one of the greatest players to play on one of the greatest franchises in the MLB. And he was, I mean, one of the faces of the MLB. If you're talking about it from a marketability standpoint, everyone knows David Ortiz. Even with the steroid questions, he was loved by most people. He was a fan favorite.
I mean, when you say a guy was the face of baseball in the DR, knowing the background DR has had in baseball, see, I personally do not think he will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he deserves
probably
to be.
Not.
I'm just worried the steroids thing, he's going to get caught up in that. Look, if Bonds isn't in, if McGuire's not in, if Palmeiro's not in, and I'm not necessarily saying I want these guys in. I was once yelled at in Cooperstown because I went up to the all-time home run board and tried to scratch Barry Bonds' name off. it's a true story.
I think we differ on that, but I get that.
I don't know. I hope he gets in at some. I hope it's not a Jim Rice. We have to wait 14 years for him to get in.
Oh, it's not. He had a better career. Jim Rice had a really good 5-year stretch. David Ortiz hit, 37 home runs his last season in the MLB. The longevity is as impressive as anything,
right,
you can say.
And he was, I mean, on his game. It's very much, it's hard not to compare him to Tom Brady. He was on his game. You got to wonder, what did Brady and Ortiz do that Chara's not doing? Because it seems like 40-year-olds in this town figure it out.
Well, they're not 6'9", which I think helps a lot.
That's true.
They don't have the size, and they're not, they're probably not, it's not as strenuous as playing.
Chara's probably taking outright, more of a beating than the other two.
Absolutely. But I think it's super impressive. And if anything, it's just a testament to how much work they put in the first place. David Ortiz, I feel like with big athletes, they get a bad rap, and a lot of people don't look at them as the hardest workers and whatnot. And David Ortiz has had personality issues in the past. I think we're over that at this point. But
I think we're well beyond that.
Yeah, you know? So I don't know. I look at it, look at how his peers look at him, look at how the fans look at him, look at the legacy that he has left. Even with the steroid question, I don't think that's going to be held against him. It's not Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire, they're the extreme. Manny Ramirez was caught three times. A-Rod missed an entire season. So I don't think the legacy is as tarnished, and that's what you really got to look at when taking that into consideration.
And you can talk about the voting process for the MLB Hall of Fame as another – we could do a whole segment on that.
Yeah.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah.
But the only thing that's going to bum me out is if, a guy like A-Rod gets in on the first ballot and Ortiz doesn't.
I get that.
Was A-Rod a better player than Ortiz?
Yes.
Yeah, probably. But – again, the steroid issue is bigger with him. Ortiz was one time, and I forget if he served a suspension or not, but his name was brought up once, and it was passed. I mean,
he never got suspended for
right.
it. It was I'm in the camp. I'm probably in the minority. I think even if you did steroids, you should probably still be considered everyone else.
No, I agree. And I mean, it even strengthens the argument of why I think Pedro Martinez is the greatest player of all time.
Exactly.
Baseball is more entertaining than steroids. No, I think you should get in too. I'm fine with a slap on the wrist. You're not a first ballot guy.
Sure.
I have no problem with that. Bond should get in eventually.
Yeah.
McGwire should get in eventually. I mean, when you get down to the Sosas and the Fred McGriffs, the Juan Gonzalez's, if it was just a home – Bonds was more than just a home run guy. McGwire was more than just a home run guy. Sosa, he was the steroids. Sosa was a product of steroids. McGwire was a good player before. Bonds was maybe the 5-tool guy. He was the second coming of Willie Mays.
Guy.
Right, before he started juicing.
Yes.
So, those guys – not the conversation I want to get into –
yeah.
Talking about David Ortiz.
But it is a part of his legacy.
It is a part of his legacy, the time he played in and the fact that his name was involved. The next point, I think, that the next thing that got me thinking about, and you heard that montage we put together at the beginning there, the hardest part of putting that montage together was finding the three home runs I want. And I know there's four clips is the way it's spaced out, but the original plan was to the three home runs, three landmark home runs of David Ortiz's career. And I went, what I go with? I went with 03 ALDS, 04 ALDS, the walk-off against the Angels to end the series. I think that was 04.
Mm-hmm.
The 04, obviously, game four, get the whole thing going, ALCS, and then the 2013 Grand Slam in the ALCS. So what got left off was the double in game five of the ALCS in 04, the home run at the beginning of game seven in 04 to get things going, and a couple of the big doubles here or there. I know I had one double in, but it was against Oakland in 03. It was his first big career Red Sox hit.
There's a lot to choose from, though.
Right, so that's what I want to ask you. I know I was asking my brother for advice on it. He said to put David Ortiz's 500th home run in there. The one against the Rangers where they walked somebody to get to Ortiz in the ninth.
Yep.
Did I miss anything there? Or?
I don't think so. My personal favorite, and we were talking about this before the show, is his grand slam in game two of the 2013 ALCS, because if he doesn't hit that grand slam, I don't think the Red Sox are making it to the World Series.
No.
That would have been devastating. A game-tying grand slam in the eighth inning, the bullpen cop who had his hand. It's just so iconic,
right.
And the call is also probably my favorite call of all time, Buck's call.
That whole year, too. Well, let's not forget the Dave O'Brien call.
The threes. It was great.
Right.
But that one is probably my personal favorite. Also, just given the emotions that went into that season, of course, because I was only nine when they won in 04, so that one was so special.
You can't see the Grand Slam without hearing the This Is Our City speech and, all that. I mean, that whole season ties together.
But this also plays into the one thing we left off of his legacy is he was the clutchest hitter of our lifetime and probably one of the clutchest hitters of all time.
So this is a fun conversation. You're around having a couple drinks 4th of July weekend. Bring this one up. David Ortiz, Adam Vinatieri.
Okay.
In terms of the clutchest Boston athlete. And I know you could put Brady in there, but for sake of argument, we'll go with Vinatieri. Because Ortiz and Brady is its own argument outside of clutch.
Yeah.
Ortiz and Vinatieri, clutchest athlete in Boston sports.
They're very similar because they both have they both played forever.
Right.
One of them still is.
He's still going.
And that's tough. I would say Ortiz. I think it's tougher to come into the clutch as a hitter than it is as a kicker. Because
right.
A kicker is the same thing every time.
And Vinatieri's is more, the clutch was situational. He did
yes.
what he'd been doing. Not to take anything away from Adam Vinatieri. And I will say, the snowball kick, I know that Justin Tucker hit some like 56-yarder in the wind a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And I've had kickers tell me how difficult that kick is. But 48 yards, snowstorm, howling winds. But before this turns into me getting just nostalgic about my childhood.
Yeah.
The one other thing that I wanted to talk about here in this segment is, so now, look, when we were growing up, going to Fenway, you saw the, what was it, seven numbers, Jackie Robinson, and that's what it was for the longest time.
Yeah, it was before, the ones we've seen the past few years, Pesky, Rice, Ortiz, Boggs, and Pedro.
Right. And, you know, so you had 9-4-18, that was, anyway.
Yeah.
Now it seems like they're starting to wrap around that facade there.
Yeah.
Are the Red Sox getting a little? Are we turning into the Yankees? The Red Sox getting a little too trigger happy with retiring
yes.
numbers?
Like yes,
yeah, and I agree with you. So let's look at the recent ones. Pesky, I'm fine with. Pesky,
of course.
Yes,
yeah.
Ortiz, obviously, yes. Although I think they could have waited a couple years.
Well, look how long they waited for a guy like Pedro in comparison. Although
they didn't wait that long for Pedro.
It was
I guess
two years ago. Or how long was Pedro?
He retired. It was a little bit longer ago. They did wait long. Yes.
I think
they
it was only two or three
They
years
waited
ago.
Half a season for Ortiz.
Yeah, Wade Boggs also. I don't know. I wasn't around for Wade Boggs, but I know that the prior generation of Red Sox fans, not the biggest fan of Wade Boggs.
Look, it used to be the rule was you had to start and end your career with the Red Sox to get your number retired. Carlton Fisk got like a desk job, and that's how that counted.
Yeah.
But Wade Boggs was in Tampa. He played elsewhere in the division. Mm-hmm. He wore his Yankees World Series ring to his Red Sox number retirement ceremony.
Yeah.
You remember that? They should have taken the number down right there.
Yeah.
Wade Boggs, I'm not a fan of. Jim Rice, because he made it into the Major League Hall of Fame, I guess you retire.
He was an MVP winner with the Red Sox. So
I'll say that just to go back to Wade Boggs, I just remembered this. Wade Boggs' number was being worn when they retired it. Brock Holt was wearing it, and he had to change.
Yep.
If you're reissuing the number, like nobody had worn 45 after Pedro.
Yeah.
They unofficially retired it.
Yeah.
If you've been giving the number out, I think it means you don't need to retire it. And you can wait and whatever, but at this point, like with everything with the Red Sox, it's a money grab. They have to retire a number every year.
Yeah, and I do think it's a little bit ridiculous, and it just it lessens it. It makes it just less of an honor.
Right.
You got to use it sparingly. Pedro, yes. Ortiz, yes. Boggs, I don't know.
Like, look at the Yankees. You retire every single number. And, I mean, with the Red Sox, look, if you want to retire these guys, they should retire Babe Ruth's number 3. Now, that's going to go up there once Sandy Leone, the greatest living hitter, retires.
Yeah.
But it's just they're getting too Disney with
what
it.
What about like a Veritek? Is he probably not? But
so
like,
and here they have the Team Hall of Fame.
Yeah, which they are all. That's a much more
right.
accepting.
All of thing. Those guys belong in the Team Hall of Fame. But right, are we going to retire Veritek's number next? Are we going to retire Tim Wakefield's number next?
Yeah.
I love Tim Wakefield, but is he Pedro Martinez, David Ortiz, Ted Williams, Carl Yastrzemski? Absolutely not.
If it was the Yankee standard, he would be retired. His number would be
right.
retired for sure. I don't know if the Red Sox should go by that, though.
The Red Sox don't tear down classic stadiums. They don't retire
yes.
every number. They don't make their players have their hair a certain way. It's always been part of the difference. And just to see the Red it bugs me that the Red Sox – I hope that we go – because I can't really think of anybody –
Pedroia,
but he's still playing outside of Manny. I can't really think, and even that is kind of gray area.
Yeah.
I can't think of anybody else right now that's Pedroia will when he retires, but I think
for sure.
he's going to be another one of these Boston athletes that plays in his 40s. I can't think of anybody else out there right now that's due.
No, there are no. I think the only two, again, Pedroia and Manny, only two I can think of. Maybe Wakefield because he's a 200 game winner.
I would go Veritek before Wakefield. He was the first guy to wear the C in how long.
You might
long.
Be right. You might be right. I wouldn't be opposed to that.
I would go Veritek. But even still, Veritek to me is a Team Hall of Fame guy. He's not a – it's like retiring Jim Luskatov's number. You look up at the Celtics rafters. Felger Maz did a segment about this last week.
Yeah.
They have guys up there whose career numbers were like 15 minutes a game, 4 points a game,
yeah.
just because they won 10 titles with them back in the day. Like,
and they're going to end up retiring Pierce and maybe Garnett.
Like those,
probably
those I'm fine with.
Yeah.
I'm fine with Pierce and Garnett because, I mean, those guys were generational players.
Yeah.
I don't know that you have generational players in Veritech and Wakefield. To continue the debate on Twitter, follow us at Calling It Podcast. Tweet at us what you think about all this. We're going to take a quick break on the other side. Tyler Sullivan of 24/7 Sports and DraftKings catches up on the Patriots. Been way too long, Alex. Way too long.
Way too long.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to Calling It. Can you believe it? It's been about a month since we talked Patriots football. I really hope that's the longest we ever go without talking it. So to get us all caught up here on post-draft, OTAs, etc., Tyler Sullivan from 24/7 Sports and DraftKings. Tyler, thanks for joining us.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
So kind of the downtime I know for you right now, David Harris signing snuck in there. Should we expect much from the Patriots between now and when training camp opens in about a month?
No, outside of, you know, Julian Edelman doing a body issue for ESPN and things along those lines, I mean, you're probably not going to get too much. I mean, yeah, you might sneak up and there might be a signing here or there, but ultimately, you're not going to know anything definitively until they get back to training camp, which is going to be in like late July of sorts. This is going to be their summer break.
I feel like every year there's a veteran who's cut, who we don't really see coming, but Bill Belichick probably always has in this back pocket. Do you see anyone like a Rob Ninkovich, anyone on this Patriots team that could be cut that we might not expect to be?
I mean, one guy that I've just been kind of curious about, and maybe this is more not necessarily being cut, but I would say maybe more of being traded, guy Deion Lewis. I mean, mm-hmm. We look at him and you think that that's crazy. I mean, you all know how great Deion Lewis is and how electrifying of a player he is. But you look in that backfield, the New England Patriots, and you say, okay, Mike Gillisley has a defined role. He is going to be your physical running back, basically taking on the duties of LeGarrette Blount. You have Rex Burkhead, who's reportedly been catching a lot of passes with Tom Brady. So he kind of may be taking on some of that passing back role. Bill Belichick seems to like him. They signed him for a lot of money for this season. And then again, James White, an extension, going to keep him here for a while there as well. He has a defined role as that passing down back, similar to like a Shane Vereen of sorts. And nothing really came about with Deion Lewis, who's going to be a free agent at the end of next season. So you start to wonder, okay, where there is an emphasis on running backs this offseason. He, along with the guy like even Malcolm Butler, never got extensions. You always wonder what's going to happen with Malcolm Butler in his situation. But you look at Deion Lewis there, too. You impress in the postseason, impress when he's on the field. You never know. Could he be kind of eked out, maybe gets a good draft pick for him in terms of a trade or something like that in training camp or in the preseason? That's a guy I'm keeping my eye on.
Another guy's contract's up at the end of next season is Nate Solder. There's been some talk of an extension. The reports are that he wants to stay here, but the Patriots go in and take two tackles in the draft. What are your thoughts on them, specifically Garcia, and does Nate Solder need to prove it this year to stay in New England?
Yeah, for me, I think the Patriots, you know, I don't know if they would necessarily give him a contract extension, mostly because, like you said, it's going to be one of those things. Prove it. Bring it. Come out here in the 2017 season. Let's see what you do. But more importantly, they're going to be looking at a guy like Antonio Garcia. And by the way, he likes to go for Tony now. I don't necessarily know why. Apparently, he was going as Tony for like all of his life, and then the second he got to the draft combine, they started calling him Antonio. So it's going to be Tony Garcia. You got to look at him. They spent a draft capital on him. He's one of their higher draft picks last season. So, you know, you look at him and you say, okay, if he shows you flashes, then maybe why would you bring Nate Solder back? You know, why would you want to get older at that position if you have a young guy that's showing flashes in his rookie year to come in his sophomore season in 2018 and kind of be that guy? Basically how that happened with Nate Solder in the first place. He came in and all of a sudden kind of just played his rookie year, showed flashes, and then all of a sudden assumed the starting duties in year two. Bill Belichick likes to do that to some degree with his offensive linemen, kind of give them that rookie year to get their feet wet, and then in sophomore year, maybe even in their junior year in the league, kind of really assume more of their duties.
So do you think Tony, as it is, Tony Garcia, could be that guy for the Patriots?
Yeah, I do. I mean, listen, he's going to be dealing with a bigger leap than usual. Him and even Derek Rivers, too. Not coming from the biggest schools in the world. I mean, Youngstown State and then Troy, not necessarily Ohio State and Michigan. So it's going to be a big leap for both of those guys. But there's a reason why the Patriots like them. The reason why they brought them on this team. They do have talent. They have the physical ability to produce at this level. I mean, what was it? Antonio Garcia or Tony Garcia hadn't allowed a sack in his senior year. I mean, just ridiculous numbers there. So he has the talent to flourish in the NFL. Let's just see if he actually does it.
On the other side of the ball, you have Alan Branch back, obviously Trey Flowers a year older, Malcolm Brown a year older, but you're losing Chris Long. Even given that loss, do you expect this defensive line to take a step up, given the fact that their young guys are a year older?
I mean, for me, I look at what they're doing with the pass rush of sorts. You know, one thing that I thought is going to be kind of an impactful thing is the David Harris signing. You have David Harris going to be your middle linebacker or one of your middle linebackers, and that does a few things. That kind of puts Shay McClellan, Kyle Van Noy, Landon Roberts into their proper places. You know, you're not asking them to do too much, but it also allows you to put Dante Hightower as an outside linebacker, put him on the edge a little bit more. And we've seen, obviously, we saw in Super Bowl 51 where he was able to come off the edge and, you know, strip sack Matt Ryan, help start that comeback. You can now use Dante Hightower in more pass-rushing situations, which is going to be a big thing there. Like you said, you lose guys like Chris Long, but you have another year of Trey Flowers under his belt. He looks like he's probably going to have a big year this year. But also, don't sleep on Dante Hightower, kind of providing more of that pass rush for this defensive unit, and that's thanks to David Harris.
Yeah, and I wanted to get into the Harris signing a little more. At first, it seemed like maybe one of these veteran waivers they were going to bring in on a big incentive-laden contract. They gave him 2 years. They gave him a good amount of money. It looks like he'll be a factor in this defense. How does that affect Landon Roberts' playing time in his second year, and does that maybe put a linebacker we thought was on this team on the bubble?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, they have a ton of linebackers, and maybe a guy like, I'm blanking on his last name, Harvey, the kid out of BYU.
Harvey Lange?
Yeah, he's maybe not a sure thing to make the team anymore. You know, he's a guy that maybe is going to make it to the practice squad if he can even get through there. Maybe a team signs him there. But those are the kind of guys you look at there. I think Landon Roberts, you know, job is safe. I think Kyle Van Noy, Shay McClellan, it's basically what I said earlier. It's more, there's a good thing for them, in my opinion, because now you're not leaning on Landon Roberts to have a good sophomore year. You're not leaning on Shay McClellan or Kyle Van Noy to maybe do what they're not capable of. This kind of puts them into their proper spots. You can use them in certain situations. Like, you're not going to use Landon Roberts against the pass. You'll use him more in run situations. And you'll use maybe Shay McClellan more in pass situations than you would in run situations. You're not asking them to do a bunch of things because they necessarily didn't have that depth. Now that you have David Harris, an experienced veteran who can play, or at least, you know, last season, could play against the pass and against the run to some level of effectiveness, that helps them out tremendously, just kind of take away the expectation.
Do you think he'll be in the upper 90s percentage of downs played here in New England like he was with the Jets the last 8 years?
I don't necessarily think so. You know, I think the Patriots, now they do have a little bit of depth there. I do think they can kind of take their time with him and not necessarily have him go right into the fire. You can kind of go slow. And again, he is 33, 34 years old. He's an older player. He's been in the league for a long time. You don't necessarily want him to break down. There's a reason why that you want him here. And again, he's not shown that he's breaking down. He's played, he missed one game since 2009. The guy is just a workhorse. But still, you might want to manage him a little bit more. He is getting older in his career. You do need him for the playoffs, for, you know, in the event that Dante Hightower gets hurt. That seems to be a yearly occurrence where he misses one or two games. So you want him, David Harris, to be healthy, to be effective if there isn't a case where Dante Hightower gets hurt. So, you know, maybe he gets a lot of playing time because of some sort of situation like that, but I think the game plan going in is maybe to keep him around 80, 85, not necessarily 90.
I look at this roster top to bottom, and I can't help but compare it talent-wise to that 2007 Patriots team. For you, where does this team, this roster rank as far as, you know, the best Patriots roster in the past 15 to 20 years?
Yeah, and honestly, I wouldn't be afraid. You know, so many people, it seems like, are afraid to compare it to 2007. It's like Harry Potter, where you can't say Voldemort's name. It's like, oh, no, we have to be in hushed tones.
I mean, on this show, we've just been saying it's on the table, and that's how we refer to it.
Yes.
seriously, you know, this team is as good, as deep of a team as I've seen. Now, you look back in 2007, you say, okay, Tom Brady was four in his prime. He was younger. You had Randy Moss, who is arguably, and I wouldn't even say arguably, the best wide receiver Brady had. We'll see what Brandon Cooks does, but I don't know how anybody could top Randy Moss. That team was a juggernaut. This team, if you're going to give them anything, it's that they're the deepest Patriots team that I've seen. I mean, that's really what it is. Now, there may have been more top-heavy talent. Like, you go back into it towards the heyday of the days of the early 2000s when you have Roddy Harrison, Ty Lua, Teddy Bruschi, you know, Willie McGinnis, you know, Tom Brady, Troy Brown. You say, maybe, okay, that's a little bit more top-heavy in terms of talent. But you look at this team, especially with, you know, all of these veteran signings, you know, like David Harris, but even the top-tier guys that they signed this offseason and traded for, like Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks, while also retaining Hightower and keeping Malcolm Butler, at least for this season. I mean, you can't deny the depth behind this team. If there's anything that you can say about this team right now on whatever it is, June, you know, middle of June, heading into July, 4th of July weekend, it's that this team is the deepest Patriots team that I think they've had in the Bill Belichick era.
So with all that depth, obviously a lot of position battles going to be going on with training camp starting in about a month. In your mind, who is the most to win? Who is the most to lose at training camp this year?
I mean, one of the things that I'm looking at is, you know, and we all talk about the, you know, the wide receiver position. It's pretty set in stone to some degree, but I'm looking at Danny Amendola versus, you know, against Hawkins. That's something that I think could be interesting. And one thing that I'm looking at too is, you know, we all talk about Cyrus Jones. He was kind of a punching bag last year, and rightfully so. He was not good, and he'll tell you that as much. I'm a little curious to see what his position is going to be and what he is going to do in his second year in the league. I can't imagine the Patriots getting rid of a second-round pick as early as they would if they were to release or cut Cyrus Jones next season, but I kind of could see it happening. All of a sudden, they bring in a guy like Will Likely, who is a, you know, undrafted free agent who is a return specialist in college. You say, okay, if you secure with Cyrus Jones, you don't bring in a guy like that. And so, okay, maybe he's not going to kind of reassume the roles of a return man. Maybe you give that to a guy like Deion Lewis, or maybe you give that to a guy like Andrew Hawkins, or Danny Amendola, or Julian Edelman. There's plenty of guys that could fill that role. Because this team is so deep, you can kind of afford to bring those guys out, because if they get hurt, you have a ton of guys to, you know, assume the wide receiver position, or plenty of guys in that backfield to assume a Deion Lewis injury if he got hurt doing kick return duties. But the other thing, too, is, okay, if he's not going to be a return specialist, he's a cornerback. Let's see what he can do at that spot. He hasn't even really been playing there. I mean, it's really good. It's really been Jonathan Jones, who has been that third corner alongside Malcolm Butler and alongside Stephon Gilmore during training camp and OTAs. So you say, okay, if Jonathan Jones, an undrafted free agent from a year ago, is outperforming the second-round pick out of Alabama in that same draft class, where is the future for him here? So he's a guy that I think could very well be cut, even though he was a second-round pick just a year ago.
And we're talking to Tyler Sullivan of 24/7 Sports and DraftKings. The biggest storyline, one of the biggest storylines going into this year, is probably going to be Jimmy Garoppolo's future in New England. If you had to say today, what is his future in New England or in the NFL?
I would say that his future in the NFL is bright. I think we all can agree that he is going to be an effective quarterback. I'm not going to go out here and say he's the next, you know, he's the Aaron Rodgers to the Tom Brady, you know, the Brett Favre situation. That one gets kind of thrown out there a lot, romanticized. I think what he's shown so far is that he can be an effective quarterback in the NFL. What do you want to call that? Do you want to call that, you know, Jameis Winston? Do you want to call that Andy Dalton in terms of level of effectiveness? Or do you want to call him, you know, the next Aaron Rodgers? I'm going to kind of leave that for him to decide in his own NFL future. But in terms of what he's going to be with the Patriots, he did say that he's open to an extension, or at least he would entertain it. Now, I can't imagine Jimmy Garoppolo signing a 3-year extension with the New England Patriots and letting Tom Brady play the rest of his career while he sits on the bench and waits his turn. I cannot imagine him doing that, and honestly, he shouldn't do that. If I'm Jimmy Garoppolo, and this is just a selfish, you know, not a New England Patriots thing, this is a Jimmy Garoppolo first mindset, you take him to free agency. You go to free agency next year and you say, hey, listen, I would love to remain the New England Patriots quarterback. I like the situation. I like the weapons. I like the head coach. I like the offensive coordinator. But I don't want to stick around for 2 years. You almost have to make them pick. And as crazy as this sounds, you need to go to the New England Patriots next offseason and say, okay, it's either me or Brady. It's crazy that you have to say that, but that's kind of what you need to do if you're Jimmy Garoppolo. You got to be selfish here a little bit. You are looked upon as an up-and-coming good quarterback, maybe even great quarterback in the NFL. If they're not going to let you do it in New England, you got to go somewhere else and do it.
So the Patriots left a lot on the table by keeping him. They could have traded him, gotten something, maybe not two first-round picks from the Cleveland Browns, but they could have gotten something. What's the Patriots' logic in this? Are they ready to move on from Tom Brady in the near future, or are they just keeping him in case Brady gets hurt this season?
And so this is something that I've been kind of rolling around with, too, and just kind of wondering, okay, what's the game plan here? Because everybody loves to throw out, the Patriots are going all in on 2017. They're going all in. And I don't know if you can necessarily say that, even with the addition of Dwayne Allen, Brandon Cook, Stephon Gilmore, we all know who the guys are. Because if they were going all in, they would have cashed in all of their assets, and that would have been trading Jimmy Garoppolo for a slew of draft picks to kind of revamp, or you know, the defense, or wherever you want to kind of put those pieces in with those draft picks. They didn't do that. They ended up keeping him. And you talked about an insurance policy here. This is one thing that I would love to kind of catch Belichick's ear on. Obviously, he'd rip my head off if I actually asked him the question. You kind of pressed him on it, or he just wouldn't answer it. Would be, okay, Jimmy Garoppolo is the insurance policy in the event that Tom Brady gets hurt in 2017. So you're telling me that you can win a Super Bowl if Tom Brady goes down and Jimmy Garoppolo is your quarterback. That's the whole mindset that I could think of. Okay, you're only keeping him because we still think we can win with him if Tom Brady goes down. So what you're telling me is that you think you can win a Super Bowl with a 25-year-old guy as opposed to the 40-year-old guy. And that 25-year-old is going to be a free agent at the end of the year, but you think you can win a Super Bowl with him? Why would you ever get rid of that player? Why would you ever get rid of that player if you think you can win with him? So that makes me think that it's at least the possibility that the Patriots pick Jimmy Garoppolo over Tom Brady if it ever came to that. Because if they didn't think they could win with him, they would have traded him last offseason.
One more for you, Tyler, here before we let you go do some work with DraftKings. We'll squeeze a fantasy question in here for our fantasy football listeners. Given the depth, and we've talked a lot about it during this segment, the depth that the Patriots have, does it make really, I mean, outside of Tom Brady, does it make really anybody on this Patriots roster irrelevant or at least less valuable in fantasy, considering you don't know one week to the other who's going to be the guy?
Yeah, I do think it's going to be kind of an interesting thing. I mean, obviously, the guys that you're going to want are Tom Brady, like you said, but even Robert Gronkowski, I think you can kind of, you know, the injury concerns there, but not necessarily the volume. You know, if he's healthy, he is going to get a ton of looks there from Tom Brady. So I wouldn't be, you know, weary from going after Robert Gronkowski in that sense. If there's there's injury concerns, that will probably maybe steer owners away in the first, maybe even in the second round, too. Maybe you can snag him in the third round. But that's not necessarily a lack of, you know, looks there. It's more of a health concern there for Robert Gronkowski. But in terms of the depth on this team and the depth in this offense, you obviously look in the backfield situation. You have no idea what it's going to look like outside of Mike Gillisley. You say, okay, he's going to at least get 10 to 15 carries a game, you would think. At the goal line, you're hoping for touchdowns there. He's not necessarily going to get a lot of volume in terms of, you know, I don't know if he's going to rack up 70 yards, 100 yards each game, but you can maybe peg him for 50 and a touchdown. And, you know, in those weeks that he really does go off in terms of the game plan, calling for a physical style running game, then yeah, Mike Gillisley is a solid option. But I don't know about Rex Burkhead. I don't know about James White. I don't know about Deion Lewis. I wouldn't touch those guys. You know, maybe late round flyers, but that's really about it. You're hoping for injuries at that point. And then when you go into the wide receiver position, I think Brandon Cooks will be a safe bet. I think people are going to be kind of old, you know, too afraid to not touch him because of the you know, Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, all those guys are going to kind of be, you know, taking away targets. But I would still look at Brandon Cooks maybe in the third round. I think, you know, maybe around here he'll go in the second just because of the hype. But I still think Julian Edelman will be productive. I still think Brandon Cooks will be productive. I think one guy who's going to lose a lot of value is, you know, Chris Hogan. You know, he's a guy that I don't know if you would necessarily have on your roster in the first place. But I still think your mainstays like Cooks, Edelman, Gronkowski, Brady, you should be fine with all those guys.
Tyler Sullivan of 24/7 Sports and DraftKings. You can follow him on Twitter at Tyler Sully. A great follow. If you ever want to know when 8 Mile's on TV, by the way, Alex, here's a good one for you. Follow Tyler. He'll tell you. Tyler, thanks for taking the time.
Everybody know. It's the important thing, though.
Of course. Got to get those hard-hitting stories.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game. They're playing basketball.
Welcome back to Calling It. Which version do you like better, Curtis Blow or the Like Mike version?
You gotta go Curtis Blow. Come on.
Of course. Great movie.
Good, very good movie, yeah.
I would say it's second to Space Jam. So, basketball movie Space Jam.
Oh, God.
Like
Space
Mike.
Space Jam's your number one.
Hoosiers.
Oh, Hoosiers is three? My dad would smack you right now.
Let me just Air Bud's at the bottom.
Coach Carter?
Oh, that's a great movie.
Coach Hoosiers.
Rich what?
Hoosiers, Coach Carter. There's
Can we just agree that Air Bud sucks? I never understood that.
I haven't seen the Air Bud basketball. Any of them? Because there's like
none of them. I mean, I've seen a couple of them. I never got it. It never did anything.
You know, I never had a golden retriever when I grew up, so I didn't couldn't relate. It just wasn't.
Anyways, seems like something out of a movie. But Sunday night they played. Monday night it'll be on TV. The Big Three League, Ice Cube's business venture, shall we say? A bunch of retired basketball players going to play each other 3-on-3. Some funky rules. You going to watch this?
Yes. Yeah, I'm not expecting much, though.
I think it's like the Mayweather-McGregor fight. You're watching for the spectacle. You're not watching this to see good basketball.
Yeah, but these guys, like at least like with Mayweather, he was fighting like as of 2 years ago, and he's been training. And Conor McGregor, obviously, he's in his late 20s. He's still in the prime of his career. You have guys going out there who are in their late 40s, breaking their pelvis, and just like... I feel like nothing but bad can happen.
They played last night, and it's enough of an issue to begin with. You know, in this league, clearly, you know, they're trying to figure it out. But why are you not doing it live? Because I mean, we already know what happened. It's all on Twitter.
Yeah.
I know there were a lot of injuries last night. Some guys barely played. Allen Iverson, who's like the guy they got, he's the headline guy. He only played a couple minutes. He was 1-for-6. He's more of a coach. He said he's a coach first and a player second. Jason Williams, Vanilla White Chocolate got hurt. I think it was like kind of bad too, which you're going to have. And I mean, that's ultimately, you have to realize that's the reality of this. These guys are old. They're going to get banged up a lot, but, all three games supposedly were close. It's to 60 win by two. Most of them went beyond 60. I mean, it looks like at the very least it's competitive. I just want to see Scal.
Yes. And he'll probably be one of the better players because he's one of the youngest.
So. Yeah.
Like, it's about youth. Youth's going to win in that league.
And a lot of it, I mean, you have like, Muhammad Abdul-Rauf or that guy. A lot of former big guys.
Charles
Oakley's playing where nobody's going to want to get in the post. Nobody's going to want to bang down low. Scal's a good shooter. And that's going to work for him because I don't think there's going to be much. It's a 14-second shot clock. I think it's just going to be a lot of chalking it up. There's a 4-point spot too beyond the. There's 3 4-point spots beyond the 3-point line. So, I mean, that's something nice you can use. No, I think Scal's going
to
be good.
Some names just to rattle them off. Keith Bogans.
That's a good one.
There's Rashard Lewis.
Okay.
Kenyon Martin.
I saw Rashard Lewis was like the best player last night.
Yeah, I'd imagine Jermaine O'Neal, Steven Jackson's playing.
I think Keon Dooling's in it. I think I saw him.
Yeah, Chauncey Billups, Ricky Davis. These are all, at least they're guys from like the 2000s that played recently.
Given the need to clear, can Ricky Davis still do his faker rebound, get a triple-double strategy?
Maybe, yeah.
This is made for Ricky Davis.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I loved Ricky. And my dad, who's a very traditional basketball fan, used to get so mad that I enjoyed Ricky Davis. But come on, with the afro and the antic. There's a video of him when he was on Minnesota's first game against the Celtics after getting traded back to Minnesota, where he hits a buzzer beater 3-pointer to win the game. And it's what was that thing everybody was doing where everybody froze and you took a video and the song played? It was like a big thing summer.
It was the
something challenge.
The something.
What was it?
Mannequin Challenge.
Mannequin Challenge, yep. That's right. That's our intern, Mitch. Thank you very much. Got to go to the young people to stay plugged in. First Mannequin Challenge, he just puts that arm up. He goosenecks it. I mean, he's getting mobbed for about a minute. That dude was a nut. But, no, I mean, it should be an interesting watch.
Yeah, it's fun. I just think it's going to wear off. Like, it's going to be, okay, I saw these washed-up athletes play.
Right.
Play a 3-on-3
you're not seeing Allen Iverson in his prime.
No, and you're not going to see any highlight reel plays, really. If you do, they're going to be highlight reel plays because it's, like, ironic. Like, you wouldn't expect
or you're just
going
to see, you know, one of the younger guys cross up one of the older guys. And it's
exactly.
Gonna be like, it's not even cool. It's sad. It's an old man getting taken advantage of.
Yeah.
I will say this.
You're going to call AARP on you.
When I'm looking, so there's a flag football league starting up, too, I think, later on in the summer, and their headline guy is Michael Vick.
That's not bad.
That I think has some potential because football players retire younger, and I mean, Mike Vick playing flag, dude, like,
yeah,
come on, give me some of that.
And it, I mean, it all depends on if these guys stay in shape too. Like, how right. how many of them are really going to like be able to play and in this tournament and be able to last 60 points is a long game for 3-on-3.
It's a halftime at 30, but like at least with the football thing, like we just talked about, you know, with David Ortiz, there's always that itch to come back, and this could work for the Big Three League too.
Mm-hmm.
It gives maybe some of these guys an outlet where they're thinking about coming back. They don't have to go back, play professionally, take the beating, take the wear and tear. They can go play this, get their fill. And I mean, for the NFL, it'd be great to just pick off guys who've been, who just retired, who maybe get that itch, like a Reggie Wayne type.
Yeah.
And for basketball as well, I could totally see LeBron doing something like this the year after he retires.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm more excited for like the Olympics though, because
that's going to be,
how's this going to compete against like legitimate, like professionals, current day professionals playing 3-on-3, and then you have this, which is just like a nostalgia thing. Right. Like you're just going to be watching these guys.
Well, look, they got 15,000 at the Barclays Center last night.
That's bad pretty at all. Good. Yeah, but that's the first one.
That's the first one. Yeah. That's right. So that, I mean, to an extent, they have the, this is what I was thinking. They got the nicknames on the back of the jerseys. Yep. They got concerts going on. Is this this could just be the XFL too, where the XFL is a huge hit for a game and a half.
They should just, like, it should be tackle basketball. They should do the same exact thing.
Well, do you know what slam ball is? Have you ever seen slam ball?
Oh, yeah, yeah, with the trampolines?
Give me professional slam ball.
That would be fun, but you would get messed up. Like, that's, I feel like.
Well, not necessarily tackle slam ball, although it's all padded. But
that wouldn't be a bad idea. Now that you're saying this.
I want slam ball to come back. That was fun to watch. I could watch those YouTube videos all day.
I mean, it's still big in China.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Of course it is.
They're still playing a lot, yeah.
What was it? Remember Quadre Ishmael? He was a wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah.
See, the Rock at the Missile, he had a brother. Mm-hmm. He was like a two-time champion slam ball coach.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
A coach, not a player. He was a coach.
Yeah.
That's way. I feel like that's like
one of the brothers was
coaching
slam ball. The other was coaching lingerie football. Some proud parents.
Coaching's in their blood.
That's 100%. 100%. Yeah. No, but you know, yeah, it's got a little XFL feel to it for sure, but we'll see. You know what? Basketball, and we've talked about this before on the show, basketball, unlike any other sport, people are more so fans of players than teams. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the draw is you have people who just want to see Allen Iverson again, even if it's for a couple minutes a night, even if he's not good. He got standing ovations every time he was in the game last night, every time he touched the ball.
Yeah, and I'd expect that. But again, that's going to wear off. Like I think this is like a good idea. But it's about it if the product's entertaining. And once you get past, like, oh, that's Allen Iverson, you'll be like, I mean, that's a 45-year-old guy playing men's league. That's essentially what it becomes.
If they get 1 year out of it, I think it's a success.
Yeah.
And because when you get into the second season, are you going to watch a second season of it? They'd have to bring in new players. I'm mostly just into the – I just want to see the flag football one now. I saw it on Twitter. I watched tonight, the Big Three. I want to see what the flag one looks like now. And frankly, this could be kind of fun for baseball too. You played like a 6-inning game with a bunch of.
I think that'd be great. I don't know if you saw. I was going to bring this up. Kevin Millar this weekend played Independent League.
Yes,
and he hit a bomb.
He crushed that thing.
So like, I think that would be more fun because even Manny, he's like 45. He's in Japan now.
But he's crushing Japanese minor league.
I was watching a video. He's hitting like 485 over there. Like he can still hit. Like you can still hit at that age. You can still play and pitch at that age.
Can you get him to come back? Because his contract currently has free sushi, unlimited free sushi.
It does,
and that is going to be tough to compete with.
I don't know, and he doesn't have to go to practice. That's another thing.
That's another. It's living the life.
Literally, all he does is show up for games and eats the freshest of tuna. Like it's the life. He's playing baseball, getting paid, and getting free food. That's what I want to do.
No, baseball would be great. Do you think that I was trying to figure this out because the reaction of the pitcher? Did that pitcher groove that one to Millar?
Potentially, maybe.
I think he did. And not taking anything away. I mean, he hit that ball. That was also, can we talk about that? That was a big and a packed stadium for independent baseball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, they probably knew that Kevin Millar was coming into play. Right. I don't know the circumstances of the game.
It's still a big stadium, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a lot of people. And then a lot of those stadiums actually do pretty well, a lot of these teams. But, yeah, he may have grooved it. But you see that a lot with independent league teams. Like you bring in like the Worcester Tornadoes when they were there, they had Jose Canseco on their team. And I think he's actually suing them right now for not playing.
Of course. Well, Oyo Cam Boyd played for the Brockton Rocks for like 2 years.
Yeah,
in
that makes
50s.
Sense.
Bill Lee played for the Brockton Rocks.
I think Bill Murray used to own the Brockton Rocks.
I think
back
you're right.
Day.
But no, they had Bill Buck. One of the favorite I have up on the wall in my room. is a Brockton Rock schedule, and they one time, because Bill Buckner was their manager at one point, and they had a Bill Buckner fielding skills night where like Bill Buckner taught you how to field, and I'm like, you just can't.
That's not the guy you want to get lessons from.
Look, don't get me wrong, Bill Buckner was a great player.
Very good, yeah.
I don't know if I'd go to Bill Buckner fielding camp.
I think that's the last place you want
to
go.
It's like going to Rashe Caldwell football receivers camp, you know?
Yeah, it's probably not the guy you want to learn from.
But, you know, anything to watch old guys try to play sports is always a good time. Anyways, that's just about a wrap on us. I'd like to thank Tyler Sullivan of 24/7 Sports. I would like to thank Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe for coming on and chatting with us. Follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast, on SoundCloud as well. If this wasn't enough from us, if you just need more of me for some reason, you can catch me on Snap Call tomorrow night, Tuesday night. I'll be doing the Red Sox. And on Friday night as well. Alex, anything for you real quick? We got like 5 seconds.
John Lebo Show Thursdays at John Lebo Show on Twitter.
Follow that. We will be back next Monday, 4th of July show. Talk to you then. Bye.
You've been listening to Callin' It. This episode has been brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Snap Call, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.